Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Cinemas podcast. This week we will be discussing Oliver Stone's biopic of Edward Snowden, Snowden. I'm Sam Howlett and this week I'm joined by Jenna Hobbs.
Hi.
And Jake Cunningham.
Hiya.
Later on in the show we will have an interview with the star of Snowden, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Hi, this is Jake from the Curzon Film Podcast, rudely interrupting Sam's beautiful introduction there to give you some sad news. Unfortunately, due to some unforeseen circumstances, we are unable to broadcast our interview with Joseph Gordon-Levitt for Snowden this week. We do discuss the interview through the show, so hopefully you'll get some idea of what we discussed. But you can be rest assured that Mr. Gordon-Levitt was on fine form, and he discussed the personal inflections that he had on the role that actually brought comments from Edward Snowden's parents about how much of that character he really took on, even down just to the intimacies of the face and voice that they really picked up on, even as Snowden's parents. He also made it quite clear that in a post-election viewing of the film, how important it is that we are aware of the footprint that we have with our online presence and how aware we need to be of the decisions we make online.
So just a quick introduction, Snowden is the true life story of Edward Snowden, an NSA surveillance analyst, yeah, who very famously publicly leaked files from the NSA revealing that the US government had surveillance and information on everyone. And it's a huge scandal, and so yeah, this is Oliver Stone's retelling of that story. But one of the biggest talking points about Edward Snowden is, should he be pardoned? Because currently he's a wanted man, he's living in Russia, and there's this huge thing of should he be pardoned, and will, a few years down the line, will he be pardoned in his lifetime, in our lifetime? So my opening question for you two is, which actor should be pardoned for a bad role throughout their career? Jake, let's start with you.
Okay, so this one took me a while because now we have so many iconic actors that have kind of done that Robert De Niro. And I thought, I'll just do like the Robert De Niro, Al Pacino thing. I'll just pick one from there. But then I realised I could pardon one, but then there's
an infinite number of other ones.
Yeah, and then so this week I watched A Winter's Tale with Colin Farrell, which is really excellent. Do check it out. But that's horrendous, and I thought maybe I should pardon him for that. But then I went on Colin Farrell's filmography, and that's not wonderful, really. so I think if I pardoned him that, then there's...
Where's the line?
Yeah, exactly.
So you're looking for an actor that's generally good?
Yeah.
That's just made a few mistakes?
Yeah. Okay. And so what I'm going for is someone that I think is relatively consistently good.
Yep.
But they got a blunder. And I'm going for Cate Blanchett.
Mm.
In?
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Awful Russian accent. Cate Blanchett, she deserves better. I was reminded this week of Carol, and because it's getting Christmassy, and I just think she is so good in so many things. There were some stills coming out from Ocean's 8 or Ocean's Ocho, and she looks like she could totally lead that. She's got so much charisma, and she can handle so many different roles, and I just think she was wasted. Not even wasted, but I'm not quite sure what she was trying to do or what the film was trying to do in that respect. But I would like to pardon her for that.
So why do you forgive her for that?
Because she's
so good elsewhere.
Exactly.
That everyone's allowed one bad one.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're going down that route. All right.
Everybody gets one.
Everybody gets one. Correct. Jenna.
I'm following Jake on an accent front, I think.
Okay.
Although Jake's just reminded me of Al Pacino and Danny Collins, which I think needs to be pardoned and wiped off.
I thought that was your favourite film.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, baby girl, what's going on?
Why do we know that?
Because it's the same as
Sweet
Caroline.
Seen it.
But no, I'm going back to my original thought. I want to pardon, and we can debate whether or not her whole career is a little touch and go, but Anne Hathaway... for One Day, which was so unbelievably awful. Her Yorkshire accent is probably one of the worst assaults my ears have received. And I think generally she's very good. I loved her in Les Mis. I've loved her in all sorts of other things. But that film needs to go.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen it? It's not your genre. Not really.
I haven't seen it, but I'm familiar with her bad accent.
Yeah.
I've watched... clips of the accent.
Yeah.
So I think that tells us that it's fair pardon.
Yeah.
I'd like to pardon her for a scene in Interstellar.
Which talks about the power of love.
Yeah.
That is the worst scene in that film by a long shot.
Yeah.
Which is a film I really like, but that scene has no place in that film.
Yeah.
I couldn't decide between two, so I'm going to be greedy and have two. Sorry.
It's just like you on Christmas, isn't it?
It's Christmas after all. We're allowed to be indulgent. My first choice is links back to both of yours, actually. You mentioned New York Winter's Tale earlier. You mentioned Anne Hathaway in Les Mis.
It's Russell Crowe.
It's Russell Crowe in Les Mis Rob. He is a very, very, very bad singer.
Yes.
In a film where he constantly sings. So that pairing, I don't know what they were thinking. Why would you hire an actor who can't sing for an entirely singing role? Yeah. It doesn't make any sense, but... I watched Gladiator again this morning and really, really enjoyed it. You don't like it?
Yeah, I think Gladiator's really, really cheesy.
Yeah.
I really like Gladiator.
I love Gladiator. And it just reminded me that I quite like Russell Crowe. I thought, yeah, he's good in this and he's really good in LA Confidential. And I thought, I can forgive him for trying something different in Les Mis.
Okay.
It didn't work at all. It
he
didn't
went
work
out of his
whatsoever.
Comfort zone.
I've got to stop you there.
Yeah?
Because... neither of you have watched A New York Winter's Tale. And you, Russell Crowe, I mean, if you're saying Les Mis is Russell Crowe trying something different,
yeah.
I don't know what he's doing in A New York Winter's Tale.
Correct me if I'm wrong, he plays a demon?
He is a demon Irish gangster working for Will Smith's Satan.
Wow.
So
I have no idea what this film's about. Could you give me a very quick synopsis?
I don't think I could. But
it's based on a book that's about 2000 pages or something, isn't
okay.
it?
Okay.
In the early 20th century New York, he falls in love with a girl whilst he's like gone to rob her house, and she offers him a cup of tea and they fall in love, and Russell Crowe works for the devil, and so his job is to stop miracles from happening, and he raised Colin Farrell and Colin Farrell's fallen in love, and Russell Crowe thinks that this is his miracle, and so Russell Crowe is determined to stop that, but also it happens in 2016 and Colin Farrell's still there and there's some other stuff with Jennifer Connelly, and the whole thing is absolutely astonishing.
I think I'd like it.
I have already agreed to watch it again before Christmas, and I only watched it for the first time like 2 days ago. I can't wait to watch it again with a group of people because it is amazing. And my girlfriend kept falling asleep throughout, and it is the most brilliant film for when people wake up after they've been napping for 5 minutes and you suddenly realise how insane it is when you have to try to explain what has just happened.
So there we go. Russell Crowe and Les Mis.
Who was your second one?
Sorry, Sam.
It's all right. Eddie Redmayne in Jupiter Ascending.
I was just about to mention Jupiter Ascending for a mad film.
That is mad, and he's awful in it.
Like, that was just after the Oscar as well, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he's truly awful in it. But again, this, I think any actor would pick up on that and play a villain in an OTT sci-fi film directed by the Wachowskis. So I think you can forgive him for trying that. But he is god-awful. If you watch it on YouTube, like a compilation of Eddie Redmayne's scenes from Jupiter Ascending, you'll see what I mean. It's really, really bad. But he's having fun.
Yeah, that's the main thing.
That's the main thing about that's acting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jenna, you do drama stuff.
Thanks, Sam. Yeah, it's all about the fun.
It's all about the fun, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. And we all know, if you have fun on a film set, the film's going to be great. Yeah. That's the rule, isn't it?
Hey, if you're getting paid that much for it, why not?
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of pardoning people, there's a huge campaign out there to pardon Edward Snowden. And I suppose we'll get into the kind of should he or shouldn't he, the message of the film and what the sort of general consensus is about that a bit later on and yep. how the film presents that kind of debate.
It's pretty cold out there. I think we're about to get snowed in.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Puntastic.
Excellent.
Thanks.
So yeah, Snowden, true love biopic of Edward Snowden. How important do you think it is that this film exists, telling this story in the way it does?
It's not something I looked into before this film. So I think because of that, obviously it is important because this is a huge, big topic yeah. that's affecting everyone. And it's something I just decided to opt out of when it was on the news, really. And I probably shouldn't have. So I'm glad it's brought it all to my attention.
Yeah, I think we talk about that in the interview there
yeah.
about the role of this film to make this story accessible, that people know the name Edward Snowden, but they might not know why they know that name. And I think this film gives people a gateway into that story. And I think that is what the film is trying to achieve.
Yeah, definitely. So I've seen the documentary Citizen Four. The film kind of jumps back between two different time periods. Mm-hmm. Which is Ed Snowden after he's released the files and is hiding in a Hong Kong hotel room, and Ed Snowden before this all happened and building up to that. The documentary Citizen 4 is made by Laura Poitras, played by Melissa Leo in the film. So it's all the stuff in the Citizen 4 is basically all the scenes in the hotel room.
Okay.
And as that's happening. But it's pretty much solidly is just that. And is very limited to that. And his film really about Ed Snowden. It's more about the surveillance industry and about the actual concept of this whole, the NSA surveillance. Whereas this is, as you say, a more accessible story about a man, a human being, the human being behind that story. As you said, people know the name Snowden. They know that there was the Snowden incident and that there is a man called Snowden out there, but they don't know anything about him. This is telling that story. So, and when this film was announced, I thought, oh God, they're just... this is pointless. They're remaking a documentary that was released 2 or 3 years ago. And the same thing happened with The Walk.
Yeah, I think The Walk had a bit more time gap. Like there was, I think, 10 years between...
Man on Wire.
Yeah. Or was it? I think it might have been 2006.
Okay.
So maybe 8 or 9 years.
But this, as you said...
Yeah. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's carving a niche there.
Definitely, yeah. But I was worried that it was going to have the same thing, just a sort of slightly pointless remake. But I think this tells a different story in overall.
Mm.
So I think these two films can peacefully coexist. And it is accessible. And it is, I think it's important it's made that way so that people, as we said, who don't know enough about this will get the opportunity.
Yeah, I think when you're gauging a film's success, I think you can look at how much you take out of the cinema with you. We talk so much about, oh, we'll watch this film, and then in 2 weeks you probably couldn't remember the main character's name. And then in a year you can't even remember, you might stick it on and think you've never seen it before. It's that forgettable. But this, I watched it, and then it really sticks with you and actually makes you take effect on your own life and actually makes you think about what you're doing and the presence you have on the internet.
Yeah, it's really scary. It was made because I've kind of heard about, you know, phone hacking and this and that, but I've always thought, oh, I'm not very interesting. I've not got anything to hide. There's no way, you know, if someone wants to read my messages, whatever, what will they find? But the thought of having camera, your camera turn on and watch you when you're in your bedroom. Yeah, or
very creepy.
So strange.
Yeah, I know a few people that have their webcam, laptop cameras taped
covered.
Up.
Yeah, yeah. The head of the NSA has his laptop covered, and Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook, has his webcam covered as well.
I've always been like you. I've always thought they can watch me if they want. I'm not doing anything particularly interesting.
But that's such a bad.
I know. They even talk about that in the film.
Like that, if you've got nothing to fear, you've got nothing to hide.
Yeah, because his girlfriend kind of thinks that.
Yeah, he says that's not the point. It's the principle. Yeah. It's the fact that
So it has made me think a bit about that, and like the fact that we've had, you know, like WhatsApp is now encrypted and things like this, which I kind of hadn't thought of. I was like, oh right, okay, but now I feel kind of grateful that WhatsApp's encrypted itself.
And like if you're looking up slippers on Amazon and then you're on Facebook, and on the side, adverts for slippers appear. Like, oh, okay.
So that explains your cupboard full of slippers.
Yeah. No one's supposed to know, but now the NSA know.
Yeah. This is between you, me, the NSA, and Marks and Spencer's.
I can't afford Marks and Spencer's slippers. Oh. So, I think it's an important film to highlight that this is happening. Mm-hmm. And that it actually impacts everyone, as you said. Everyone uses a smartphone now. Everyone uses a laptop.
Yeah, there's an interesting bit at some point in the film where they talk about that's the price you pay for wanting to live in a digital world. And should it be the price you pay?
Yeah.
And I think we're living more and more of our lives online. Like our bank accounts are on your phone now and all of that kind of thing just scary.
We're completely online. Yeah. Everything's online. We think, oh, that's so convenient. That's so handy. That's made our lives easier. But when you see a film like this, what's the price we've actually paid for that?
Yeah. And it makes me think of the actual filmmaking process that Stone would have gone through. I wonder how secure his set, or when he was transferring files around, like how, like
if he's got loads of microwaves he's putting stuff in.
Like, I wonder how paranoid that set must be.
So let's talk about where the film positions Snowden, where it positions us watching this film about Snowden, and what position Oliver Stone falls to, because I think this film very heavily lies on Edward Snowden is a hero.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And definitely. Do you think that was the right direction for this film? Should it have made a very active, very conscious decision to align itself to a position on Snowden? Or should it? Do you think you would have rather it been a bit more in the middle, been a bit more even-handed? What do you think? Because I think for us, people of our age and of our frame of mind...
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ed Stone did nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. Am I right in saying that, do you think?
Yeah, of course.
But there is obviously a large group of people out there who think Ed Snowden is a traitor, has committed a huge crime and has potentially endangered a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
Which the film doesn't go into as much.
I think the film could have done with moments of justification for that side rather than just being completely on this one side. Because we do, the people that we see that have those opinions are just immediately, oh, you're a bad guy.
It's the demonization of the right is what this film does.
It would be nice to have someone say these things and then be challenged on it and there to be some kind of discourse about it. But there isn't at all, really. I don't know. I mean, yes, I do think what he did was the right thing, and he's obviously paid a very heavy price for it. I know there's also another camp where it's like, oh, has he done it for the fame? Because he made himself public and who he was, and he gives loads of interviews and loads of talks and things. But I don't think... I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
I think there's this whole... Yeah, so the people you hear in the film that are against it, Donald Trump is one of them. Mm-hmm. It's a very conscious choice to have him, to have a quote from him. But then also, Obama's in there.
Yeah.
Obama's an incredibly popular president. And I think people don't talk enough about the fact that this is Obama's administration that was doing this.
Yeah.
So it does... I mean, yeah, we say it's quite uneven in that respect, but I think there are little moments of even-handedness.
Yeah, I think it could have done with more.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with where it did position itself.
So am I. I think my problem with film, a lot of films these days, is they're too scared to make a judgment call on these things.
We talked about this with I, Daniel Blake, and that it had that standpoint, but I'm glad that it had that standpoint, and it was firmly in its corner, and it was fighting its battle, and I'm glad this is doing the same.
It's not trying to please everyone. It's a weird example, but Clint Eastwood's J. Edgar, it trod a line between good guy, bad guy, left wing, right wing, and it is a kind of bit of a mess because it's just trying to please everyone. And that's sort of a general problem with a lot of Hollywood films, is that they have to please everyone. Everyone has to be happy. If we miss out on any kind of audience, we're doomed. So I think the film is kind of brave, and that's sort of what Oliver Stone's always done, is he's been very politically minded, and that's not calmed down throughout his career at all, and this just proves that he's still fighting for that side of what he thinks is right. So there are going to be a lot of people who perhaps think Edward Snowden shouldn't be pardoned and is a traitor. That may not be as inclined to see this film because of that, but I think it's the right call to make, to pick a side.
Do you think, if you do think that and you watch this film, you might change your mind? Or do you?
Potentially.
Yeah, I think potentially.
Yeah.
I think it manages to bring the, like, even the idea of the NSA and the surveillance thing, it's a distant idea.
Yeah.
And this kind of thing is maintained by politicians to be quite distant and confusing. Like, this is like what The Big Short covered with the financial crisis.
Yeah.
They use complicated things so that the public can't really access those ideas. And I think Snowden does that really well, taking these big international global ideas, humanizing them, taking them down to a ground level so that we, the general public, have access to it.
Yeah.
And we can understand it.
Yeah. And also, they really emphasised the point that Edward Snowden was a Republican, was a soldier, and turned to this whole idea of protecting American values after 9/11, which is quite sort of, I guess, a right-wing mind frame, in a way.
Yeah.
But they don't shy away from that.
And then, he's asked so often, do you love America?
Yeah.
Do you think America is the greatest country in the world? Like, on a lie detector, and it's always coming through with, yes, he does. So they're trying to hammer that point that he is a true patriot.
He's not this kind of crazy left activist. He's not a full-on liberal. He is a complicated character. He has his own opinions, he has his own convictions, and what he's doing isn't particularly politically minded. I think it's important.
Yeah,
he's doing it out of right and wrong rather than left and right.
Yeah,
and I think this is an important time to talk about Joseph Gordon-Levitt's performance, because I think he really sells that.
Yeah,
and he sells the film to you.
I think he's really excellent in this. Only for the first few minutes was I thinking, this is an impression.
Yes, yeah.
Before I lost myself to it, and I was fine. And I'd stopped seeing Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it.
I think he's one of the strongest parts of the film, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
He makes looking at a computer look interesting.
Yes.
And sells that very well.
Oh, that's such a cliche, isn't it, with these computer technology led films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That there's so much of trying to make people at a keyboard look interesting. But the way he uses his face, it's only very minor shifts, but you can really feel what he's feeling at those points, and he's just looking at a screen.
Yeah, I think he must have done a lot of research into it.
I think he did, and from what the interview sounded like, he sounds like he's really interested in this as a subject. This isn't just a job for him. He really has dived into the world of Edward Snowden. And he really looks like him.
Yeah.
Like, really looks like him. I know it's kind of a vain point, it doesn't really matter, but when
helps you believe, though.
When he first came on screen, I thought, oh my God, I didn't think he'd look like that at all.
Mm.
He's the spit image of Ed Snowden. Mm. And the multiple shifting glasses was a nice touch, because I don't own glasses, but I've heard from people that do wear glasses, oh, you go through so many glasses throughout your lifetime. It's unreal.
And I think the glasses really work for me to keep track of what time frame
things
are in. It's like a time code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really neat way of doing it. I could just imagine if they were shooting different time zones on different days, I could just imagine that they shoot a whole scene and then like some continuity person will just go, oh God, we're shooting with the 2003 glasses.
All right, so let's quickly talk about some of the supporting characters in the film.
Nicolas Cage.
Nick Cage.
Out of nowhere.
Oh, blindsided.
Yeah.
A wild Cage appears.
This was one of the moments of the film that didn't quite work for me.
I loved it.
I know you loved it. I love Nick Cage. But why would you put Nick Cage in, like, two scenes?
Well,
it's not even a cameo. It's beyond a cameo, but it's not a leading role. It was very confusing.
But that is... like, Oliver Stone has done that before. Like, in JFK, the supporting cast is... there's lots of big names there.
Yeah.
And they might not necessarily have a big role. I think Risa Farns is the only supporting person that's a big actor that kind of gets some meatiness.
Yeah, you've got, like, Melissa Leo, we mentioned, Zachary Quinto, Tom
Wilkinson.
Shailene Woodley.
And that is a supporting role.
Yeah. And Jolie Richardson.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've got a lot of supporting actors here in minor roles, but just the fact that it's Nick Cage.
I think it's because...
it's because it's Nick Cage.
Yeah, that's it. That's why we notice it.
Yeah.
I think he'll be nominated for an Oscar for it.
Like, it's not like the other ones. I just read, it's Tom Wilkinson. Oh, my God. It's a wild Tom Wilkinson. He's so crazy. I enjoyed The Cage, and I always enjoy The Cage.
Me too.
It's fine for me.
Okay.
I enjoyed Risa Farns.
I enjoyed Risa Farns.
He was
sneery villain, and I particularly enjoyed the scene where he's a giant head.
Yeah,
yes,
it had this kind
great.
Of 1984 Big Brother feel to it.
Yeah, and it's so not subtle.
It's not subtle.
That's why I really like it.
Yeah, the subtlety has never been Oliver Stone's thing. And I suppose when you're doing an angry political message, you don't want subtlety. Mm. And there are some scenes that are very unsubtle, like when we can't really spoil this film because it's real life, but when he gets the file out of the NSA,
yes,
a big bright white light shines on him as he smiles.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the least subtle thing ever.
Yeah.
But it does work in the film because it's painting him as a heroic figure, and it's not trying to hide that.
Yeah. Oh, and you've got other Logan Marshall Green, a.k.a. not Tom Hardy.
Yeah. The guy from Prometheus.
Yeah.
He was in Two Shots.
Yeah. And
Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah.
As the field agent.
It's all held together.
It is,
by
yeah.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yes.
And I think I couldn't get along with any of the other characters whilst he's not there.
Mm.
And he kind of elevates it. And he makes it believable because his performance, you can feel him losing himself into it. And I think he needs to be there. The amount that he's committed to the role, you need it to be that, have gone that far. Otherwise, it might just feel like this is a glorified reconstruction.
Yeah, I agree with you, definitely. What did you guys think about the relationship between, I've forgotten his wife's name, oh, girlfriend's name,
Lindsay,
that's right. Did you think it was necessary to show that within the film?
Yeah, because I think they needed to show the burden and what he has
had to...
how
big a sacrifice.
How this has affected not just him.
Yeah, I think it needed to be there. I don't think it was handled in the best way.
Yeah.
No, most of the time you see them arguing together rather than being in a more... an actual loving relationship. And I think we needed just a few more scenes to really enforce the fact that they are a very loving couple as they are in real life.
Yeah,
I think that's the tricky thing, isn't it? When you do something that's quite episodic and such a big time frame, you kind of stick with, I suppose, the big moments and you lose the little details that make a couple seem believable and happy.
They need to keep the bits in that will keep the plot making sense.
Yeah.
And that does mean stripping what makes up characters.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, they needed to show the strain it had on the couple. But I think one or two more scenes of them.
Yeah, I agree.
Showing what they're giving up.
More of it.
Yeah,
because I think Shailene Woodley is a good actress.
Yeah, I like her.
Yeah, she's just been lumbered a bit recently. She's great in The Descendants.
Mm.
But yeah, she needs something to really propel her.
Yeah.
Like, this could have been potentially that supporting role biopic.
Yeah.
That's that. That
on
is
paper.
That's your standard Oscar fodder. But just didn't quite hit the mark in this. I think the only actor that's really going to be coming out of this one that can truly hold a head high is
Joseph.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a film about his character. His character's in the name. That's kind of natural, I think, that it's all about him. Not in a kind of narcissistic way. I think it's supposed to be all about him. And every single other character, as we said, is a supporting role rather than a co-lead. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important. Okay, so we're going to go into spoiler territory now. I mean, we have said it's hard. You can't really spoil this film, but there are a few things that it would be nicer not to know before going in. So if you haven't seen the film or want to go in completely fresh, stop listening now and go and see Snowden.
Yeah.
But if you have seen Snowden and want to know a little bit more about what we think, stick with us. So we spoke about the relationship between Lindsay and Edward Snowden just now. And the documentary ends with Edward Snowden reaching Moscow. And he's in his house there. The camera's watching him from afar. And you see Lindsay go up behind him and sort of help and make pasta with him. And it says on screen, and Lindsay went with him and now lives there with him. And it's just this really nice moment showing you that even throughout everything that he's done, she's stuck with him. She's living in exile with him, away from her family, away from her country, away from her friends. She's kind of a collaborator in that sense. And that was a really nice moment. And in the film, in the Snowden film, I just don't think you get that sense of what she gives up as well.
Yeah.
Because the way the film ends, which didn't entirely work for me...
With the real Snowden.
I wasn't convinced by that, because I think we've watched Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and the film should end with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I know he's not actually Snowden, and the film is all about Snowden, but I just think we needed more closure.
Do you think I like the idea of it, but yeah. I wanted the Gordon-Levitt Snowden to get his bow. Like, it's like he doesn't
exactly. He doesn't get his final scene. He doesn't finish his own film.
Yeah.
And like the way documentary ends, I'd love to have seen Shailene Woodley physically go to Moscow with Joseph Gordon-Levitt Snowden and show that, because their relationship feels unfinished.
Yeah.
The way it ends. Yeah. So what did you guys think about that? I think this is the biggest spoiler of the film, and this was the biggest surprise to me.
He actually comes out.
The film transitions to Joseph Gordon-Levitt talking to become the actual Edward Snowden, and that Edward Snowden participated in this film about him.
It really threw me. Yeah. I was really in it, really invested. And I think by the time you've got to that point, you've taken on a lot of information. You truly have to believe Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Snowden. And it just threw me. And I think, consequently, I didn't really listen to the last points that Snowden made properly.
So it's almost a reverse of from the start of the film of trying to believe Gordon-Levitt is him. And in that time, you're kind of just looking at a person doing a caricature or something. And that's all you're thinking about, rather than the performance. And then in this sense, the actual person coming in who we've been trying to
convince us. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is Snowden. Trust us. You're watching Snowden. And then to turn that on its head is a strange decision. I get why they've done it. And it's an interesting way to end the film.
I actually liked it.
It's something quite nice about it.
Yeah.
He is still around, that he still has the same views. He doesn't regret what he's done. He knows what he's done is good, and he's happy to participate in a film about him. But it just doesn't quite work for me on a sort of as a viewer.
I don't think it was just the shot, the one particular shot, the transition between Gordon-Levitt and Snowden. I think it was a close-up, and it was too big, the difference was so obvious, and that kind of threw me. But I really, really like the idea of it.
Okay.
Because I think, like, even just his Twitter picture, his face is so well known.
Yeah.
It's like an old-style wanted thing that you might see on the side of a saloon. And again, it's that idea of humanizing something that people are very distant from, and people have literally only seen this guy's face. If they haven't seen Citizen Four, they've never heard him speak or anything like that. And he gets the big important points in at the end of the film. And I think for that reason, it's important that it comes from the man himself.
It's audacious and it's brave. It didn't work for me, but I get why they've done it. It is a really brave way to end a film. I can't think of any other biopic that ends with the actor transitioning to the actual person.
And I think it's because in this instance, the biopic is someone young.
Yeah. definitely. Mm. We're going to have to wrap up there. But very quickly, Citizen 4 is available on Curzon Home Cinema. So do check that out once you've seen Snowden. It's a really nice companion piece. And I think they work really well together. And also available is Chirac and Unknown Girl, last week's films, which you can catch up on last week's podcast.
Yep, and do make sure you tune in to our European Film Awards special, which will be coming out shortly. We'll be heading over to Poland to tweet live the results as they're coming in. So make sure you follow Curzon Home Cinema on Twitter. That's me and Sam. We'll be live tweeting that and doing a roundup podcast with all the nominations and the winners from that evening. So make sure you get ready for that, which will be coming later this week.
Excellent. So that's goodbye from Jake.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Jenna.
Bye.
Goodbye from me. Tape over your webcams, people.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.